theme song of Cap'n Spear's Broadside, somewhere else before. Hopefully we'll have some interesting new material for you. We're expecting a few in-studio guests, a victim of the drug war, and also a person who has been active in the fight against psychiatric abuse. Last-minute guests, plus we're having interviews from San Diego to San Jose, and who knows, we may get something even more local from Santa Cruz. Stay tuned for Civil Rights for the Poor for the July 8th edition of Baffled Spears Broadsides. Edition of Bathrobe Spear's Broadsides. I'm Bathrobe Spear. You can check out my broadside by firing a volley of your own this way. Phone number is 427-3772. Sounds like we got an early bird on the line.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Hi, this is your producer checking in and want a little more volume on your signal.
Oh, thank you very much. How's that?
That's an improvement.
Okay, let's do.
So apparently we are just a little too low on the volume, and we're going to have to up the volume. So if my producer finds this insufficient, please, producer, give me another call. If not, I will assume that everyone out there in radio land can hear me. And if you can, let's make sure everyone can hear you. Give a call to 427-3772 if you want to join in this discussion with some thoughts of your own. Usually we cover subjects as varied as the Santa Cruz City sleeping ban, how it treats its homeless population, how police generally are acting towards the residents, citizens, and locals here in Santa Cruz, as well as the out-of-towners. A particular focus on the situation for folks who are outside, out-of-doors. I'm particularly interested in rights of the homeless. And today we're going to have interviews with Lance Holbert of San Diego's Streetlight, a local paper down there, published, written, and sold by homeless people. We're also going to talk to Lennox Sweeney of San Jose. We have an interesting situation coming up on Saturday. I received a press release from the Frank Little Club of Berkeley. Showdown on Free Speech, First Amendment Rights in San Jose, Saturday. And it reads as follows. Activists fighting police brutality and other injustices in San Jose have repeatedly complained of police suppression of their right to distribute information. The San Jose Berryessa Flea Market has been one of the many spots where First Amendment rights have been consistently trampled upon by authorities. Thus, the Berryessa Flea Market entrance has been chosen as a site for a peaceful challenge to suppression of free speech on Saturday afternoon. That's the day after tomorrow. On Saturday, July 10th, 1 p.m. at the entrance to the Berryessa Flea Market, and I'm not quite sure how that's pronounced, but it is spelled B-E-R-R-Y-E-S-S-A, Berryessa, perhaps? A united front of activists from San Francisco to Berkeley to Concord to Santa Cruz and beyond will join local San Jose activists in leaflet for the upcoming July 24th San Jose March and Rally Against Police Brutality. Come and see for yourself how the San Jose police and other authorities respond to people peacefully exercising their First Amendment rights. don't accept falsified San Jose PD accounts or excuses. The First Amendment of the U.S. Constitution supposedly guarantees all individuals the right to free speech and free expression. The U.S. Supreme Court has repeatedly ruled that peaceful distribution of leaflets is considered a right under the First Amendment. In the Premiard decision, places where anyone may exercise this right include public sidewalks, public or private malls, and shopping center parking lots, so long as the shoppers and auto traffic is not impeded. San Jose civil rights attorney Dan Mayfield of the National Lawyers Guild informs us that the city of San Jose lost a case that involved their attempt to suppress leafleting at the Berryessa flea market. Still, the SJPD continues to threaten peaceful leafleters with arrest, as maintains the police state atmosphere in San Jose. On May 15th, five activists from the Frank Little Club and other groups attempted to leaflet the entrance to the Berryessa flea market with flyers promoting the People's Cultural Festival, a May 22nd benefit for the South Bay mobilization to free Mumia Abu-Jamal and all political prisoners. At the site of the festival, a worker setting up for the festival was attacked by a lone SJPD officer who then called in two more officers to cover up and make excuses for the criminal actions of the attacking officer. The San Jose police threatened to arrest the leafleters if they continued. The SJPD also boasted of arresting other leafleters whose views they disagreed with, including, quote, communists and, quote, religious activists. Ironically, Mumia Abu-Jamal, a political prisoner on death row in Pennsylvania, who was framed and wrongfully accused and convicted of killing a cop, has long been oppressed for exercising his First Amendment rights. Mumia was framed in retaliation for reporting police brutality on the radio and in print, and since his incarceration has been repeatedly censored from expressing his views in print and in recordings prepared for radio airplay. Mumia has been successful in each of his three federal lawsuits against the prisons for violating his civil rights. In the early morning hours before the People's Cultural Festival in San Jose, on May 15th, the worker setting up for the festival was attacked on private property by a lone SJPD officer who then called in two more officers, as mentioned before. United Front of Mumia supporters, anti-war activists, police abuse foes, Peace and Freedom Party members, and union organizers have come together to peacefully challenge these illegal abuses. We're taking a lesson from the IWW, the Industrial Workers of the World, their free speech fights in 1908 through 1912, in which mass, nonviolent, direct action forced more than 25 cities to stop the arrest, harassment, and torture of union organizers who were merely exercising their First Amendment rights. Without the rights of free speech and peaceful assembly, freedom and democracy are meaningless, empty slogans. We must stop these attacks on our civil liberties. San Jose epitomizes the police state lurking behind a PR-savvy facade. Reality is that the SJPD has the highest rate of excessive use of force of police of any large city in the USA, as measured by the acclaimed method of comparing police homicides to the overall homicide rate. San Jose had the worst rate at 5.8 per 100 in the first half of the decade, 1900 through 95, more than triple New York's rate in those pre-Giuliani years, and 7 per 100 in the first half of 1999. Just last week, the San Jose Police Department killed 3 people in 3 days. Citizens Police Review Board and Lisa Rose take note. So, let's hear a little of what activist Lennox Sweeney, who will be in San Jose at the Berryessa Flea Market on Saturday, has to say about this. I spoke to him a few minutes ago, and here is the taped interview on that subject.
Talking about a case today on July 8th, 1998. We're talking to Lennox Sweeney, an activist with Food Not Bombs and the Frank Little Club. Is that accurate?
I'm not actually with the Frank Little Club. They're helping us out, trying to help San Jose get organized and more activated, I think, and to bolster the Peace and Freedom Party at the same time.
Now, what's been happening recently, I guess Food Not Bombs has been serving once a week, or is it twice a week in San Jose? And what's the name of the park?
St. James Park. We're down to rather weak serving on Saturdays. The police has done a fairly good job of emptying the park just by continuous harassment of the people that stay there.
Mm-hmm. And I know that they did that with Cesar Chavez Park, actually kind of gating it off, right?
That's not true. It is not fenced.
Oh, it isn't fenced?
No.
I thought that they changed
it. They rumor a lot, but I don't know where it came from. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess. Well, huh, that's good. I mean, I know you used to serve in Cesar Chavez Park. You moved to What's it called again?
St. James.
St. James Park, I'll get that right.
Uh-huh.
And there was some concern about, actually some plan to kind of do a counterattack on the gentrification efforts in San Jose. In fact, I even heard a fellow talking about gentrification and its dangers up in San Francisco a week ago, who came from San Jose. Has this sort of fallen by the wayside? How are you doing in fighting gentrification?
I think two people are taking it seriously, and the rest of us are busy with other things and kind of ignoring it.
Also, I've heard that in the Mercury News, the Community Homeless Alliance Ministry is once again sort of in the headlines. The church has been taking in homeless families and is now getting called on the carpet by the city for violating zoning regulations. Is that accurate?
Oh, we're doing that again?
I'm here, yeah.
I haven't kept up with them either, I'm sorry.
Oh, that's okay. So on Saturday, of course, I will have read for the audience out there the problems that folks have been suffering around trying to give out leaflets at the San Jose flea market. Do you have any updates on that for us?
Probably not any updates. This has been run through the local courts, and to some Prune Ridge decision, it is legal to...
Prune Ridge decision, yeah.
It's legal to leaflet on private property under certain circumstances, and the flea market seems to fulfill the criteria. But in spite of it's already been through the courts, the local security guards and police take pride in driving people away, and they claim they have arrested people. So we're just going to get out there and flyer and try to open it up and maybe use it for a fundraiser if they decide to arrest us.
Any updates on free radio in San Jose?
I don't know of any free radio.
What about police harassment of homeless people for sitting? I know that San Jose has a notorious sit on the sidewalk, get up to 6 months in jail law for a 66 square block area downtown. Any news on that?
I haven't heard about that.
Okay.
The activity level of harassing people in the park is pretty high. And 4th of July, we're doing some leafleting in St. James Park, and one of our people taped up a small sign to this concrete podium and, sort of with the appearance of a homeless person, one of the, and the police asked him to take down his sign. I guess park regulations, it's illegal to, to fasten anything to any parts of the park. So he took it down and then they told him to leave the park. It's another park service rule that if you break a park rule, they can excommunicate you for a day.
Uh-huh.
So this is kind of how they keep people from staying there, by just beating them down with these little things.
Mm. It sounds like due process is being dumped out the window as usual.
Well, it's, they have an obnoxious set of laws, and if they choose to enforce them all...
You can't. I mean, until you're actually convicted of violating a park code, you haven't been... A police officer cannot decide you've violated a park code and convict you. He can arrest you for it, he can charge you with it, but he cannot conclude that you have in fact done that and then put a conviction on your record. Now that sounds like a bizarre and bogus interpretation of if there is any such code, an existing code.
At least they can tell you to leave the park and that they will arrest you if you're back in the park.
You should take a look at the code section and see what it actually says. I would wonder whether it actually literally says that. Another question I have for you, I know there was a community tribunal that was sort of beginning to take off, kind of acquire momentum, came from a kind of a dissident section of the grand jury that was concerned that there was a form of racism and discrimination happening in grand jury decision making.
Yes.
And there's also a lot of concern about police brutality. And of course we've read in the papers that six people have been killed by police since beginning of the year. What's cooking around that?
That's three in the last week, I think.
Wow.
Two people shot by San Jose police, and another person who was having a diabetic seizure, and the person taking care of him called 911, and out came the police. And Well, they found the man unconscious on top of his caretaker, I guess. She was trying to pull him off the bed so he wouldn't fall off if he had a seizure, and the police came in this awkward moment and decided that he was attacking her and, you know, handcuffed him and basically kept him from getting treatment in a timely fashion, so he did end up dying. Yeah, he might have died anyway, but...
Sounds like the police in San Jose do not have a clue.
Yeah, calling 911 is becoming a dangerous thing, because the police are likely to come out and shoot you.
That sounds like something out of a Charlie Chaplin movie, only...
Yes.
Mm-hmm. What about the community tribunal, or whatever it's being called these days?
It seems to be going strong. It's mostly doing things sort of quietly from people that don't come out to the public meetings that I'm going to. You know, they're doing some court watch stuff and talking to DAs and judges and avoiding some of the irrational sentences that might come out normally. The Citizens Tribunal, together with the NAACP and the South Bay Lumia Coalition, are putting together a march and rally for the 24th of July.
Where is that going to be?
It's mostly about... it focuses on police brutality and injustice, sort of in Santa Clara County, and also on educating people about Lumia. So, yeah, we're going to have testimony about people who've been eaten.
Mm-hmm. Where is it, as I said before?
Sorry.
Where and when?
Let's see, it's meeting at 11 o'clock at Roosevelt Park, which is 19th and Santa Clara.
11 o'clock, Roosevelt Park, July 24th. Is there a number people can call?
How about 257-9424.
257-9424, that's of course your number.
Yes.
In San Jose, in area code 408. Is that accurate?
Yes. Sorry.
Sure, that's good. So in case people don't want to make a long distance call and want more information about the July 24th rally, well, I guess there is one in 2 days, on Saturday, on July 10th, give a call to 423 Health. We've been talking to Lennox Sweeney, activist with Food Not Bombs and other groups concerned with basic constitutional rights for poor people and for all of us. Anything you want to add, Lennox?
Don't have anything else in mind right now.
Hey, thank you very much.
Okay. Down and live.
change. It's got to stop, it's wrong. And when the smoke burns down to ash and the broken glass is swept, when the blood-stained concrete streets are washed and the bitter tears are wept, in anger and in pain, the questions still remain. Are we a government of laws or a government of men? With liberty and justice for whom and when? Streets of anger, streets of rage, of every race and every age. To loot and burn, to shoot and kill, and leave 50 people cold and still. The city of the angels, consumed in hell like fury. While four white cops are walking free, I say jail that judge and jury. And oh, people, can we get along? This is not the way to face. It's got to stop, it's wrong. When the smoke burns down to ash and the broken glass is swept, when the blood-stained concrete streets are washed and the bitter tears are wept, in anger and in pain, the questions still remain. Are we a government of laws or a government of men? With liberty and justice for whom and when? With liberty and justice for whom and when? With liberty and justice for whom and
say the verdict in the four officers accused of beating Rodney King, who seemed to be doing just that on the videotape, but found not guilty by the Simi Valley jury. Back in, I think it was 92, thereabouts. Pretty heavy stuff at that time. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. I'm your host, Robert Norse. For the next hour and a half, please join me. Give a call if you want to join in the discussion of any of these topics at 427-3772. If you have a voicemail message, something you want announced over the air, you can do that. Up to 2 minutes, 427-4523. Leave us your message, and we'll put it out over the airwaves. We're also, of course, looking for a place to move to, as we're going to be evicted within a week or two. Actually, I think August 1st is the complete deadline. But anybody who has any ideas, any offers, any notions of where Free Radio Santa Cruz can go, we are reliable tenants, we pay our rent, and the government has never really intervened in any substantial way to harass or to penalize landlords who rent to us. They have occasionally shown up at the door and demanded we close down. We've told them to take a flying hike somewhere else, get themselves a warrant and court order, or just do something better with their time, because we believe we're performing a valuable community service. And for that service to continue, we need a place to perform it from. So if you have any thoughts on that, give a call to the voicemail at 427-4523. Again, to repeat that, 427-4523. And our on-air number remains 427-FRSC, 427-3772, if you want to join the show in progress. There's lots happening tonight, or at least something else happening in competition with Bathrop Spears Broadsides that may and perhaps should distract your attention. The community television show Voices from the Village starts at 7:30 and runs until 8:30. And on that show tonight, according to a press release that reached me earlier today, Charles Vaughn Sr., mental health and police practices, is going to be discussed. On May 19, 1998, Charles Vaughn Sr. was shot to death by the Seaside Police. Mr. Vaughn's family had sought mental health assistance for him just hours before the shooting. Following this tragic event, a number of practices have been modified in the Seaside Police Department, and a number of practices have not been modified. The show examines the effects the killing has had on the community, and perhaps Charles will also be talking about the fast or hunger strike he went on for, was it 3 or 4 weeks, in order to reopen the federal investigation into this case and secure certain other reforms. And that's happening at 7:30 tonight, live call-in television on community television channel 71. And at some point my producer will no doubt give me the number to call so people can know what number to call. Even if you don't get community television but you want to be a part of the discussion, you can call community television and be a part of the discussion about police abuse and how communities can organize to fight police abuse, particularly against an intransigent bureaucracy which supports the police at all costs. We have an incoming call.
Hi, you're on free radio.
And if you want to call into Voices from the Village, the call-in number is 425-4920.
425-4920. I will make a note of that just in case anybody does want to call in and forgets the number. And thank you, producer.
And then, of course, then my show.
Oh,
I have a little TV show on Channel 71, and that's also on this evening starting at 7 o'clock. It's called Club Cruise, and the host is Nick Whitehead, and the guest is Charlie Barclaw, a woman who's speaking about women in prison and that issue. So that'll be tonight at 7, and then Voices from the Village at 7:30.
And the Voices from the Village call-in number again is 425-4920. Thank you.
Sure.
On that show will be Charles Vaughn Jr., chairman of the Charles Vaughn Sr. Foundation, member of the Mental Health and Police Practices Task Force of the Vaughn Committee, Mel Mason, chair of the Mental Health and Police Practices Task Force of the Vaughn Committee, and a former Seaside Council member, and Rhonda Summerton, a researcher in the case of the police shooting of Charles Vaughn Sr. This is the guy who supposedly was menacing a police officer with a corkscrew on the roof of a seaside home where the police had tracked him down. He simply wanted to be left alone, but apparently the police wouldn't leave him alone, even in his own apartment. And the police officer who went up there was told by his sergeant, if he moves after you've pepper sprayed him, cap him, meaning kill him, shoot him. I think that's what one of the officers. The officer going up on the roof said to the man on the ground. In any case, what was one of the two, and the man was indeed shot dead after he was pepper sprayed and reacted to the pepper spray, supposedly in a threatening manner. It's pretty serious stuff when individuals charged with enforcing law, given this very, very serious power, are shooting people down in this way. And I hope you tune into this show. Again, 7:30, Channel 71, Voices from the Village, Charles Vaughn Sr. Tune in at 7 if you want to check out Club Cruise and Women in Prison, which is a recorded show, and then go into the live show at 7:30. And all the while, of course, keep your radio tuned to 96.3 FM with your third ear so you can keep tabs on Bathrop Spears Broadsides. which is what show you're listening to right now. Well, last show, which was on Sunday, I do the show twice a week, Sunday at 11 in the morning from 11 to 1:30, and of course Thursday night 6 to 8, I played for the first time an interview with Julianne, the visitor who has now been made immortal, and you can see her picture on the internet, and on the second page of the Santa Cruz Sentinel, and in videotapes at the Citizens Police Review Board, as the woman who was publicly tortured by Officer David LaFavor as part of his police work in arresting protesters at the May 22nd demonstration against the bombing of Yugoslavia, where our dear Representative Farr was helping fundraise for his fellow Democratic Party hacks who were littering the Yugoslav landscape with cluster bombs and with uranium-depleted munitions, which are, not to mention, polluting, destroying polluting the rivers in Yugoslavia. For who knows how long? Stories appeared in today's paper about that, in yesterday's paper, about how the NATO powers repeatedly bombed chemical plants that have essentially turned the fish into peculiar creatures in numerous rivers in Yugoslavia, all, of course, in the name of human rights and, of course, to stop any kind of casualties that might result from a real ground war. The idea that these superpowers can bomb little countries into submission on a whim, without sanction, without authorization from the UN, the U.S. Constitution, or any other body except themselves. We talked about that for months, and hopefully we'll continue to talk about it, and hopefully we'll continue to do something about it, or start to do something about it. But we're talking about the May 22nd protest, and as I said, last show we had an interview with Julianne, the woman who was tortured. Now we're going to, she was tortured with a child in her arms, and her partner, Almond, was also tortured. And we're going to hear his interview now. He talked to us the day after the incident, and this is what he told us.
How long have you been in town?
We got here the day before yesterday.
And you want to tell us in your own words what happened the other day at the protest against the war in Yugoslavia on Front Street?
We were standing in front of the dining hall, chanting, and then they took the first person arrested, and we followed her to the police van, and I stood in front of the police van, and I was just observing everything with the child on my shoulders, and I looked over and I saw my companion crying, saying, "He's hurting me."
The companion was
Julianne Wagner.
She had a child on her shoulders, or was holding in her arms a child?
On her shoulders. She's the mother of the two children. I was holding her other daughter.
And how old is her other daughter?
She's over two years old.
And her name?
Bianca.
And you were holding Bianca, and this was near the police van?
This was in front of the police van. I'd instinctively tried to get the police officer's hands off of Julianne, because obviously he was abusing her.
I didn't know he was abusing her.
Because she was in pain. I could see that. She was shouting, crying. So at that point, another officer told me that I was going to be under arrest, and was trying to take the other child, Bianca, that I had on the shoulders, off of me, saying that they would give her to someone else. Well, actually, of course, they were shouting in our faces, and then another officer had to remind the officer that was being verbally violent with me that I had a child on me. And then he kind of
was the officer shouting at you, Officer LaFavor?
No, he was a younger with a side in his what is that? His haircut had a little apart on the side. He's younger.
That's Officer Lamas.
I don't remember the names, but he had to be reminded that there was a child, and then they wanted to take her away from me, and I was backing off, trying to. At that point, I don't really remember much that Julianne was being carried away to the side, and then I was pushed over to follow her, but then the woman police officer told me to stand back because she hadn't known that I was supposed to be arrested. So amongst the whole confusion, that's when Julianne was freed, and I was backing off just away from the car to the other side of the street. And somehow, I don't even remember Nassim intervening, but...
Was some officer trying to arrest you at this point?
Yeah, he told me that I was under arrest, probably because I touched the officer hurting Julianne. So at that point they were trying to arrest me, but
how did they treat you? The child was on your shoulders at this point, or?
They tried to take her off even though she was clinging onto me, and then by this time she was on my back. And
a 2-year-old child.
Yeah. She was crying, yelling for her mom because she saw her mother get hurt and being pushed over to the side of the van. I don't know if she was getting hurt or not because it was behind me. I can't feel for her, and she can't talk. She can't tell me if she got hurt. But anyways, all of a sudden, we're just leaving the place because it's obviously dangerous for the children. Not appropriate place, and I didn't even look back, and we just left the place. That's all I remember.
I appreciate the account. Thank you. Anything you want to add?
I hope the police officers realize how much trauma they have put into these children just by being so aggressive in such an inappropriate way. For example, Nenufar, the older child, saw someone just picking up the phone and thought they were going to call the cops. And
this was as we walked up the street about half an hour ago.
Yeah.
And the incident with these officers occurred yesterday.
Pardon?
Yeah, the incident with these officers occurred yesterday, but even 24 hours later, the older child was still upset, frightened when she saw someone pick up the phone.
Yeah, she thought that they were going to call the cops and they were the police, and they were going to come and hassle us in some way. We had to reassure her that what we were doing, singing a song in the street, that it was not illegal, that it was okay, that people are free to speak their mind here. And I kind of reassured her and calmed her down.
USA, stop the bombing, 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 USA, stop the bombing.
Thank you very much. So, thank you very much. Anything else?
Thank you. Thank you very much for understanding.
And guns and uniforms. pray and shed a tear. Last night I heard the strangest thing I never heard before. I heard that Richard Nixon put an end to the Vietnam War.
So we're talking to a writer right here on account of a man beaten by a trailbuster?
Well, a guy had a stroke. He was walking with groceries in a cane. I think he said around four or six skinheads grabbed him, beat him up, cracked his jaw, put a fracture in his jaw. He went to the newspaper and he talked to a woman there claiming she was going to put an article.
May Wong, perhaps?
I think it was May Wong.
May Wong had an article in the Friday Sentinel which had no mention of anybody who came to the paper, but simply had a quote from Steve Clark, Sergeant Steve Clark, who said there was only one report mentioning, I guess, you don't mention any names at all. Did mention any names at all in that article, Becky? Do you remember? No. He said there hasn't been, there have been no more troll bustings than one in the last few years.
He's a liar.
He is a liar. Consciously a liar.
Yeah, consciously.
That's, of course, the same Steve Clark who was harassing Anthony Douglas a block away for panhandling about 3 weeks ago.
Well, you know, this guy went to that paper. I would say it would have been Friday or Thursday, because we were looking Friday and said
he was an older guy with a cane.
Yeah, he had a stroke and he got his jaw cracked.
And did his assault happen?
He went to the DA too.
Right.
It happened on his way down, coming out by the river.
Did you talk to him as well?
Yeah, he told me to look for it in the newspaper.
Did he say if there was any conversation with either sailor? Did they say anything?
No, they just laughed and just kept kicking.
Were they white guys? Or
yeah. Yeah,
were they white guys dressed in black?
No, they were just skinheads.
Just skinheads. Yeah. And Scott, you say you've heard something?
A friend of mine, a guy named Long John, used to always carry, he's a tall guy with a beard. Mm-hmm. He's been carrying a guitar around recently. He got beat up down here, Speedbird or something. It's like a little used clothing store near the liquor store.
Okay.
He was walking past there, and there was a crowd of like, say, 15 or 20 skinheads. And he just like kept on walking through them, and when he got to the middle of them, they just all jumped him.
Where was this?
Right down here by Benicio's Liquors, in front of that store called
Speedboat.
I guess it was in the early evening.
And do you know what day it was?
About a week ago.
Is he made his homeless, or?
Yeah, at the moment he is. And they stole his guitar. Although he said that was a relief, because now he doesn't have to carry it around anymore.
That's right. Well, there you are. They're doing the kind of man of public service, and he's complaining.
Well, he was sort of complaining about all the bumps and bruises he received.
A small price to pay. Thank you, Scott. Yeah.
And there are a few interviews from a couple of weeks back on the streets with Scott Graham and Ryder on troll busting, the beating of homeless people for sport, a apparently popular hate crime in Santa Cruz with some folks, for which I guess there's been one arrest, actually two arrests. One of them is juvenile, one of them a fellow famed for giving out white supremacist literature. My reaction to this was, rather than feeling pleased that the police had done something, I felt somewhat skeptical that they had gotten had gone after the worst, most stereotyped, most obviously kind of weirdo kind of trollbuster. And the many other people who've been involved in this, and we're talking about 20 assaults by different groups of people, assaults that Some homeless people say were prompted by Catherine Byers' huge to-do about the sleeping ban, but actually which did nothing except alarm some conservatives and put on a show for some liberals. My concern was that these two arrests were not really a major attack on the problem, but that were sort of a sop, if you will. But I was immediately criticized by some of my more conservative friends for not giving the police credit. Indeed, you know, arrests for people who are doing assaulted behavior against homeless people as a step forward. Got to say that. And I will. I will say that. I'm just concerned that if action is not taken to protect the rest of the homeless community by opening up a safe zone, by which I mean a zone where homeless people can feel safe, not because it's policed per se, but because it's legal to sleep there at night, at least at night. I mean, there should be a 24-hour zone where it's legal to be. There should be a number of them, and people should not in any way be restricted to those zones, but there should be some specific places available, particularly given the incredible crisis with rents and massive evictions that are taking place throughout the city. I'm hearing more and more about evictions every day, not to mention myself, for heaven's sakes. But so far, of course, Mary a peep out of our progressive city council on this issue. Mary a peep from Christopher Crone, who has put in some porta potties. Maybe we can get sleep people in those porta potties. That might be the next approach. The porta potty update, by the way, as I mentioned last week, actually, perhaps the best thing to do is for me to play a little more of a conversation I had with Scott Graham after a last city council meeting, which was two weeks ago. There's another one coming up next Tuesday. I know everyone's invited. I don't have the agenda, so I won't be able to give you more information on that until the Sunday show, but I can tell you then what's going on. Although it's been pointed out to me that fluttering near city council meetings like anxious and eager debutantes at a ball is the height of stupidity for most of us activists. We just can't seem to think of anything else creative to do. But indeed, there is a city council meeting coming up next Tuesday, and I'll be briefing you on that on Sunday. Let you know more of what's happening around that. Let's hear a little more of the conversation I had with Scott Graham on, actually, it begins by talking about the what I call the Crone Crapper Commission, or the Task Force on Bathrooms. Actually, what it is it's sort of a porta-potty group, porta-potty panel, if you will, which has gotten the okay of City Council to appropriate, $15,000, $20,000, maybe a little more, maybe a little less, I'm not sure, for five porta-potties, and to upgrade the one that is currently a 24-hour porta-potty for all you folks wandering around at night looking for a place to take a dump in back of Logos Bookstore in the parking lot back there. They're planning to put in porta-potties at some other parking garages or parking areas, and also at the area near St. Francis Soup Kitchen, kind of between St. Francis and the San Lorenzo Lumberyard, where the day laborers can use a place to, a pot to piss in, if you will. So anyway, here's a little discussion on that subject, and we'll take it up after that.
Were made were Linda LeMaster, Laura Tucker, Lou Weiss, the 27 days, recently through the Streetwise Concert and has been actively urging the council to open up a campground, and for years an activist around this issue. Some of this, my suspicion is that they're dumping activists into this group as a sort of a ghetto or a safe zone, dumping them and referring the problems to them so they can safely ignore any recommendations that come out of that group.
Well, we're hoping that we will hone this new task force as much as you did the council task force and be on their heels day and night.
Sort of a way of getting off the scent.
Right, they're trying to throw you off at it.
Well, of course, my view of the task force is that it's, although I must say that the homeless, the Crone Crapper Commission, as I call it, or the task force on bathrooms, has actually come up with some porta-potties and actually been able to get the council to appropriate money for them, five porta-potties, and there's nothing wrong with that. I'm glad to see that, although I would like to see the porta-potties extended to areas that people use when they sleep at night, because I think that's an important, amenity to have both for the community and for the campers themselves, and for the environment, for God's sake. Everybody benefits from that. And that hasn't been done yet, but perhaps that will be done or could be done. There will be a majority for these sort of elementary items. But the problem with the homelessness task force, as I say, or the homeless issues task force, is that they have
really only a couple of basic questions to ask. For me, we have to, where can people sleep? Point one. Should they be able to sleep? Or how long should they be able to sleep? Or, how many people will this bring to town if they sleep or whatever? But where are we going to put people immediately in terms of this immediate need? And secondly, how do we restore civil rights to people, not just homeless people, but everybody downtown in terms of laws that targeted the homeless that were passed in the mid-90s, the downtown ordinances? And the third question is, what social services, and many of them, need to be buffed up? Established, even from zilch. And it seems to me if we take narrow areas and inquire and we're going to come up with strong, quick recommendations, the task force might be helpful in providing a prestigious, well-documented background for some of these concerns. But this has got a six-month running time. It looks to me like one of these task forces they established in order to avoid dealing with real issues. What's your sense on this?
I'm not really sure what the impetus is to starting the task force. Other than,
the crime and sugar.
No, it's to get the focus the energy somewhere other than on the council around the homeless issue.
Right.
Put that focus.
Problems from the rural communications line, the Babs.
Well, not only that, but then these different Nazi neighborhood associations can come and yell at the task force instead of yelling at the city council.
But will they? I think that they don't want to associate with people, particularly people like you're talking about fairly militant activists on the task force so far. Although I suppose, well, it sounds like Matthews, Hernandez, and Rapkin don't even want to appoint people, so anybody can get on.
You could get on. You could be Hernandez's pick because you could get someone, another person on the council to say, well, I'm going to take Michael Hernandez's pick and choose Robert Norris.
I think the only time Hernandez would demand to have his choice back.
Well, he went through the middle to prove that he said that, and
Catherine can always change her mind.
Well, I don't know. I mean, once they say they've given up their choice on something and someone else picks it up, I think it's gone.
Well, I think there's a lot that needs to be done, but I'm afraid that this is pretty much a blind eye. Although, as I wrote in the speech, which I didn't deliver today because, like you, I was too late for the afternoon session, I'd love to be proved wrong. I'd love to be shown that this task force gets off its butt real fast and goes in and does some strong actions that the council cannot ignore or really uses to forward a real agenda for restoring rights for homeless people in Santa Cruz.
Well, like you said, the people that are on there right now are good people. And hopefully they will. Regardless of what the staff they end up with does or whatever, maybe they will pick their own agenda and do their own thing to the point where they'll push the envelope a little bit or something.
Except we're talking to Scott Brown, by the way. Scott is a longtime environmental activist, resident of Santa Cruz. Almost himself, I might say, outdoors liver for, 15 years?
Well, something like that, yeah.
And so you know what it's like to be homeless in Santa Cruz. You're familiar with, from both sides of the situation, the need for what kind of the tidy camper syndrome, which I think is real. I think it would be good to have activists and city council and a staff member establishing a program for homeless people to learn how to camp if they wanted. It could be assigned it as a penalty for a camping ticket. You'd have to go through a program, just like you have to go through a drug program, an alcohol program. You have to go through a program. You have to answer questions, where do you throw this? Of course, it'd be nice if they had some trash cans around in these areas, too. It may not always be useful, but...
Well, people do carry the stuff that they end up throwing around the bushes out there. So somehow they carry it out there. They should be able to carry it back. I mean, I always do what I can. I'm against giving camping tickets. I think the police should be out there giving littering tickets and making that, when people go in and get their littering ticket, that they don't have to pay a community service fee. They just automatically get assigned to clean up the area where they're caught littering.
It's sort of like I've always felt that drunk drivers should be assigned to hospital crews and highway patrol people that deal with accidents on the highway.
Yeah, or working in a drunk tank or in some drunk rehab facility or something, you know, taking care of people that are so delirious they can't take care of themselves.
Right. Just the idea of them seeing people injured and mad on the highway, to me, I think would be the kind of lesson that would stop people from drinking and driving. If they had to actually observe people, of course, I don't know, maybe there are police officers who drink and drive, and I'm sure they see a lot of this.
So. Yeah, there's police officers that buy alcohol for the kids that happen to be in a car.
We're talking about the ill-fated sergeant. The proud prior internal affairs officer who did such a fine job as liaison of the Citizens Police Review Board. Of course, I'm speaking sarcastically. The new man is Sergeant Sepulveda, who has already been denounced by individuals who tried to file complaints with him as discouraging his complaints. I'm talking about one of our homeless task force members, Laura Tucker, who tried to file a complaint. She told me regarding an incident she was seen downtown about a woman being painfully handcuffed by a police officer. And Sepulveda kept kind of trying to get it. He let it go, didn't take information about her name. It was a series of fuck-ups on his part, which sounded like business as usual at the police department, but of course I wasn't listening at the other end of the line. Anyway, I've been talking to Scott Green, and I've been, of course, throwing my ear in at every possible moment.
Of course, Robert.
What else is going on? What are the issues that the city council needs to confront in the next few months? If they're not confronted, but you think it should be on their agenda, Scott?
Well, myself, I think somehow they have to rein in the various departments in the city. I mean, it seems like all these departments, especially in this whole budget process, all these departments have got their territory staked out. They've got it all worked out with the city manager and the rest of the staff on who's going to get what and how they're going to present everything and roll it out to the council. And basically, this whole budget process and all the paperwork that gets generated by the staff pretty much has been laid out in such a way that to almost negate any kind of meddling with the whole thing. It's almost like it's laid out in front of the council, but they don't get to do anything to it. It's just like you look at it, and they'll fold it back up and then come back in a month and vote on it. You know, it's kind of, I myself would like to see a more active process where this whole budget process isn't compressed into a 2 month or 1.5 month period, but it's actually an ongoing process that goes on all year round. And if there's a number of people in the community involved, that's another big problem, is that the community just doesn't come out to these things. And it is pretty boring, but this is the money that you're paying your taxes for. And if you're not here talking about it with them while they're doing it, the rest of the year is a rash, you know? I mean, this is the time to tell them how you want your money spent. And I encourage everybody, especially next month, I think it's July 21st, when they make their votes on the budget issues, I encourage everybody to be there and put in their 2 cents worth on what they think they should be voting on, you know? Because I'd like to see them take as much as possible away from the police department, you know? I'd like to see them cut the planning department's budget in half, you know?
The redevelopment agency
actually, their budget is self-generating. They don't have what they do, because really the redevelopment agency can only function off of its own assets, the way the redevelopment law works. So every year the redevelopment agency borrows $1 million or whatever they think their budget's going to be from the city. And then by the end of the year, they pay that all back through the incremental tax that they get in the redevelopment zones. And it's sort of a hokey way of doing, because you can't supposedly fund the redevelopment agency with tax money or redevelopment money. But you can get a loan to fund it and then pay back the loan.
Yeah, pretty hokey.
Yeah.
Maybe we should move for a cap on that loan.
Well, either that or just say, wait a minute, this isn't ethical, you know, that somehow this is, you know, if I was doing this in my business, the IRS would say I was cooking the books, but it's okay for the city to do this, you know. It doesn't seem right. I mean, just from a, you know, an ethical standpoint.
But give us what the Internet Agency has done in the last few years, positively and negatively.
Well, positively, it's about the only positive things I can say they've done is they've cleaned up some of the rallies in the downtown and made a motion of walk through, so they're not like just rain soaked alleyways like they used to be. Mm-hmm. But they've done a lot of negative things. Most of the negative things are like the bat stores out here at the junction of Highway 9 and River Street and Highway 1, and bringing Costco to town, and the whole beach area plan, and all these other schemes they got going around town.
What other schemes are we looking at? And that was Scott Graham about 2 weeks ago giving us some thoughts after the afternoon, maybe even in the evening, city council meeting. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. I'm bathroom spinner Robert Morris. The phone lines are open, so give us a call at 427-3772. Sort of for a change of pace, I'd like to read a little something from Rory Carroll in Belgrade. It's a story from the Guardian newspaper in London. And it's, Belgrade is hiding toxic time bomb. Greens warn visiting delegation appalled environmental hazards in wake of NATO bombing. July 7th. The Yugoslav government is leaving its people exposed to poison by suppressing evidence that NATO's bombing has devastated the environment and contaminated the food chain, European environmentalists warn. Tons of toxic chemicals are filtering into crops, but state agencies have been banned from revealing what areas are at risk because the regime wants to reassure people that the country is returning to normality. Environmentalists said yesterday that it would take several months to assess the damage, but by then towns near bombed industrial plants could have absorbed hazardous chemicals into their water and food supplies. The state-controlled media has thrown a cloak of silence over the crisis, leaving a vacuum for scare stories and rumors. Tomato sellers at Belgrade's Zelina Pijaka market, for instance, advertise their wares as the only ones guaranteed to be radiation-free. People have been shaken by a statement by Zorka of...